Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CCW Podcast. This is Al.
Hey, everybody. Dagny's here, too.
Hey, welcome to episode 21. We're going to call this one, We Have a Dream. I just want to say thank you for sticking around with us, and once again, we find ourselves having to apologize for the delay. But before we get to the apologies and the content of this episode, I just want to give you our contact info. If you want to email us at ccwpodcast@gmail.com, and we have two websites, ccwshow.blogspot.com and ccwpodcast.podomatic.com. So feel free to hit us up on any of those, or even better yet, leave us a nice review on iTunes. And with that done, we can talk about episode 21.
Yeah, I guess holidays came and went, and then around New Year's, we had wanted to podcast, and Al woke up with the flu that's been going around, and that's taken him a week or two to recover from, so no real excuses, but just that's what's been going on our way. We're all back to, I guess Al's about to 100%. I never got sick, so we're all good here.
Yeah, that was pretty rough for me, but I don't know if you guys can tell in my voice, I'm still kind of froggy, but that was a heck of a way to start the new year. But a lot has happened since the last podcast. A lot has happened in our world, I should say, and without regurgitating all the info that's happened, the nation has changed, and we are more than ever grateful that we did pick up a rifle when we did, because it seems like they're very hard to come by. And to kind of pick up where we last left off, I had found that my foregrip, the front grip of the Daniel Defense Rifle, had begun to crack, and right after we recorded episode 20, it actually fell off, the top part of it. So, that pretty much sealed the deal for me, and I called Daniel Defense up, and, I'm happy to report they were outstanding. I called, they asked if I'd purchased the rifle from them. I basically explained that the foregrip, broke on my newly purchased rifle, and they said, did you get it from our website? And I said, no, I did not. You know, I purchased it at a gun store. And he said, oh yeah, and that's no problem. And basically asked for my name and address. And within a week, I got a replacement. So there was no questions asked by Daniel Defense. They didn't ask me to send in the foregrip to get it replaced. They just pretty much sight unseen trusted me. So that was awesome, I thought. And they didn't charge me for shipping or anything like that. But what we did notice when we did get the new foregrip back is that the part that broke off on the original appears to be much more reinforced on this replacement grip. So we're thinking, Dagny and I are thinking, that perhaps it was a problem that they may have had with those first generation foregrips, and now that they've found out about the problem, the subsequent foregrips are much better made, and it certainly appears that way with my replacement grip. So two thumbs up over here for Daniel Defense customer service. If you guys can find one, I definitely recommend getting one, and maybe now's not the time to buy it, or maybe it is the time to buy it, who knows, but if you can find one, definitely two thumbs up over here for Daniel Defense.
Yeah, and I took some pictures of the existing one that's broken, and then the replacement that they sent, and we'll get those up on the blog, so you can kind of see the reinforcement that we're talking about. There's definitely a difference in how the plastic was cast for that foregrip, and obviously we haven't gotten much use out of it. I don't think we've even taken it to the range yet, but hopefully it's a design improvement.
We haven't taken it to the range just yet, and I think that's for multiple reasons, and biggest reason is cost of ammo, and we just want to conserve what we have, just because ammo is very hard to come by right now. I'm sure all of you guys know that. Magazines are hard to come by right now, and I'm kind of kicking myself for not buying more mags when I purchased the rifle, but I'm just grateful that we have it for now. Other than that, what else did we want to talk about?
I guess to wrap up the AR conversation and move on to other topics, we went to a local gun store a couple days after Connecticut shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Just to browse. I think it was more curiosity than anything else, because the news was all a flutter with, you know, gun stores are booming and, you know, this and that and the other. So we kind of went in to just see, you know, how that was playing out in our neck of the woods. And we've never seen, you know, even just a few days after the shooting, we've never seen the place so busy. People were parking in the grass and in the businesses next to it. And we went in, and it was busy, but everyone was being taken off. I mean, it was like all hands on deck in the store. People that we'd never seen working there were there. And one of the guys that we kind of know, you know, we looked, and they had no ARs. They had nothing. And so we kind of were talking to him a little bit between customers, because he was, you know, just wondering if we needed help. We told him, no, we're just kind of checking things out. And he said, how many did they go through in just the few days since the shooting?
I want to say it was about 800 in 3 days. And I'm sure you guys in some of your bigger stores can quote even higher numbers. But what they had was a stock of 800, and it was gone. Everything. I mean, every single rifle was gone.
All of the extended mags, anything that people anticipated would be banned, and in a similar assault weapons ban, was already pretty much sold out for, like, the Glocks, anything over 10 rounds.
Right? Yeah, it's, they had, I think, at the time, they may have had some 20-round mags, P-mags, but I'm not entirely sure for that, but the 30-round P-mags were gone, and the guy that we talked to even said that the distributors were millions of magazines back-ordered, and that was probably a month ago. So
yeah, it was just
I can't imagine what the numbers are now. So we definitely, if you guys have been checking places online, the places that do have magazines, if you can find them, are charging quite a bit. And whether or not you want to say that's the market for you, or whether that's price gouging, the point is it's for people, you know, most of us out there, now is not the time to buy, or maybe it is. I don't know. I still don't know if now is the time, but, you know, in episode 20, I said that I wasn't sure that a ban or anything like that was going to happen, and then obviously we had the tragedy in Sandy Hook, and things are not looking good for a lot of us. But that's part of, you know, what I was going to do with episode 21 before the tragedy, was talk about what we wanted to get done with this podcast and with our lives in 2013. And I kind of created this mantra of, we're all in. This is all in. And I think that, you know, with the fallout and everything that's happened after the shooting in Connecticut, is that this mantra of all in is even more important. And it's kind of developed its own new meaning, at least in our household, of what it really means to be all in post this push to disarm a lot of us, and or at least make it more of a hassle. And ultimately, I think that's what's so frustrating about seeing this tragedy used as a way to make law-abiding citizens like you and I, gun owners of the world, of America, kind of feel bad. You know, and I think that, you know, 2013 and beyond, this is going to be very challenging times for us, because ultimately these new laws aren't going to stop the criminals, but they're going to make it a pain in the butt for you and I, law-abiding citizens who choose to exercise their Second Amendment rights, you know. And we are very grateful to have what we have, but perhaps in the future we won't be as forthcoming with the type of stuff that we're acquiring, just because it seems like the scrutiny is going to just be that much greater, you know. And even though we are trying to keep our privacy by staying a little incognito, I think that, you know, one of the things that we want to do is, in our private lives, you know, not stay as quiet as we have been with our families, who are, even if they are conservative in values, they're very, the idea of a gun to them is still very novel. You know, it's no longer the days of...
Or I think maybe you call it, what, a fiscal conservative and a social...
Liberal.
Social liberal, and I would throw gun rights in with the social part.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk to my grandmother on one side every Sunday, and, you know, she's pretty conservative, but she started talking gun control because of the shooting. And I guess, for me, I've been thinking a lot about the all-in. Even before the new year started, it's kind of like in lieu of a resolution for us. And it's not about throwing it in anybody's face or forcing them to deal with something that would startle them. I don't want to tell my family that we own guns and that we carry and that we're X, Y, and Z when they're not prepared for it and it would scare them. And this is particularly not the time. But I think that there is a line in all of our lives with certain people or situations where you need to be able to understand where you're going to be able to make headway. And a certain listener, at least one listener, has kind of compared it to being a person of faith and sharing your faith with someone. And it's very appropriate. And, you know, I had to tell my grandmother, you know, you're wrong, and here's why. And I didn't tell her that we own guns. And I'm sure she probably is starting to wonder, you know, but I can only bite my tongue for so long. And, you know, by the end of the conversation, she was saying, well, you know what? I think you're right. You know, like, even if I don't own a gun, you know, it's in the Bill of Rights, it's in the Constitution, it's a right, it's not something that you're mandated to exercise, but it's there for a really valid reason. And I think those are the conversations that we need to start having with people where it's appropriate.
Yeah, and it really brought me back to why I am a gun owner and why I decided to podcast. And it really just boils down to me realizing it's not about me, you know? And I took some training the other week, and the guy next to me said, you know, well, how'd you get into being a gun owner and all that stuff? And I said, well, it all first started when I got married. And he said, your wife made you a better man? And kind of said it jokingly, but I, you know, nodded my head, and I said, absolutely. You know, absolutely. It made me a better man, my wife. Because, number one, I realized that it's just not about me. And for the many years before, I had been a spoiled kid who only cared about himself and looked out for number one. And the day that I met my wife was the day that I left that all behind and realized you are responsible not only for yourself, but for other people and for your loved ones. And there is no better way to protect them than by owning and using a gun, if you need to, in self-defense. And the point that I think the founders had, and they recognize this right, is that every single oppressive government, one of their major tactics has been to disarm its citizenry. We look at our history books, in every single conflict where they have been able to oppress people, the major step was to get the guns out of the good guys' hands. All right? And I think all of you guys listening out there know that we are the good guys. We're not raving lunatics. We're not the criminals committing crimes. We want to protect our families. We want to protect ourselves. And the only way we can do it, we can't punch people in the face or 100 people in the face. It's the great equalizer. How is my wife going to protect herself from someone who might want to attack her? You know? How can I protect myself against 5 to 10 people. It's the great equalizer, and it's the founders recognized that it's not the 15th Amendment, it's the Second Amendment. It was very, very clear how important it was. It was right after the freedom of speech, freedom of expression, the right to keep and bear arms. And so it's just to see that now being continuously limited, and just realizing that it's only hurting the people who do obey the laws. You know, it's only a pain in the butt for us. And the criminals are going to continue to be able to find the ways, as they always have, by breaking the laws to get guns and to use them in bad ways. And it's not going to hurt them at all, you know?
And I don't want us to get spend too long on the soapbox, but all of the shootings that have been mentioned in the media as examples of why we need further gun control and this and that and the other have all been in gun-free zones, which just... In reality, it's preaching to the choir, but we all understand that it's circular reasoning at that point.
I think it's easy to get really mad, but I think we need to keep our heads. And I think the biggest favor that you and I, as good guys, can do is play the part of the crazy, angry, you know, you'll get my guns out, you know, blah, 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 Charlton Heston, is that his name? We don't want to get that, you know, in-your-face type of attitude. What we want to do is say, hey, we're your neighbors, we're your best friends, we are your family, and we're not crazy. We just want the ability to protect ourselves if in the horrific event something were to go wrong and someone were to try to take our lives or severely hurt us. You know, in that event, we want the ability to protect ourselves. You know, and that simple right should not be infringed. And I think that people around you should know that we're eloquent people, we're not ignorant, we're not, you know, some sort of backwards, like, you know, militia type of thing. We're Americans, and the Americans have long storied history of keeping and bearing arms. And you might say it's the one thing that makes us unique is this ability with firearms to keep them and to carry them. And it's the one thing that I think can guarantee all the other rights, you know, is this freedom from tyranny. And so how, I don't know. I guess I didn't want it to get this so boxy, but I think this is just coming from my heart. And Dagny, do you have anything to add?
I guess at a really base level with me thinking, because we've taken, you know, over a month, I guess, around a month since the whole incident to think about it and podcast, is that, you know, a right to life, you know, your happiness and all of these different things, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. How can you have a right to life without a right to defend yourself, without the right to use lethal force if it's necessitated to protect your own life? It's just counterintuitive to think that we don't have this ability. And I think there just needs to be some really basic logic and reasoning with people that maybe don't understand where we're coming from and that have bought into everything that they're told without really thinking through it.
Right. I think people who jump on the gun control side of things are just coming from a perspective of being very scared and believe that gun control will equal less crime. And I think we all realize that, you know, guys and gals on our side realize that gun control really only makes it more difficult for the good guys who have more hoops to jump through, who are denied the rights to certain things like an assault weapon or assault rifle, excuse me, or whatever you want to call it, or a quote-unquote high-capacity magazine. You know, these things only really affect us, you know. The criminal is still going to find a way to do bad things, because by definition, that's what they do. They break the law, you know? They're bad guys. They're criminals. They commit crimes. So when people, good-hearted people, are afraid of guns and they're for gun control because they believe that gun control will reduce crimes or will make people like the people who perpetrate these heinous crimes and shootings somehow less able to do that. And we saw from 94 to 2004 that Columbine happened in that period of time. School tragedies, shootings like of that caliber will happen. I think people want solutions, and this is, to them, the easiest way to say, okay, this is how we're going to deal with such a tragedy. And
it's like the fundamental flaw in the reasoning is that it's kind of like doctors labeling a disease, but they don't have a cure. You know, it's like you're pointing at the gun instead of the people who are committing the crimes. And, you know, there's all kinds of things out on social media, and I don't spend a lot of time on them, but I saw one that was kind of like a tongue-in-cheek joke saying, oh, let's pass more gun control. So you say that, you know, heroin and cocaine should be reduced. Maybe we should pass legislation against drugs. It's like the point is you can pass all the legislation you want. The people who are going to commit the crimes are still doing it. It's, you know, it's the same point over and over, and the people who don't want to get the message aren't going to get the message, and we've got to find a way to break through to them.
Yeah, and it's difficult. It's difficult because you're going to find that, you know, I think what makes us unique as a podcast and as, you know, gun owners is that you and I didn't come from a gun culture background. And I think that a lot of our audience does come from that. They were kind of grew up with a gun or a rifle in their hands. And it's kind of that culture, which makes the gun population so interesting, is that it is a culture. It's a way of life. And we've kind of come across it later in life, but we definitely are immersed in that lifestyle, and it's a culture, and it's part of our identity. We can't separate ourselves from who we are as gun owners, from who we are as people. I mean, that's part of who we are, and part of what Semper Petare is, you know, it means always carry, and that doesn't mean, you know, oh, I'm just going to run to the grocery store. I don't need to carry today. Oh, I'm running to, you know, wherever. I don't need to carry today. Because part of what that means, Semper Petare, is that, you know, we always carry, you know. And if that means avoiding gun-free zones, then so be it. Because we don't need to do it. We don't want to get into the practice of not having it in the event that we need it.
Right. And that kind of leads me to two things. One is a little personal story. The other one, before I forget it, is related to something that came up after the Aurora shooting on the Pro Arms podcast. I don't remember which gentleman was speaking, but it's kind of about, you know, voting with your feet sort of thing. And he said, you know, there's an easy way to avoid these situations. You don't go to places that disarm you. And so I don't need to go and waste, you know, $20 on a movie for Al and I at a movie theater that forces me to not exercise my right to bear arms to protect myself. And so, you know, I don't remember the last time we went to a movie. And that's a simple example, but I think it's being played out more and more. You know, if you're not allowed to carry somewhere, then maybe you should think twice about whether you really need to go there. If there's someplace else that you can patronize and get what you need. People need to know that they're not going to be rewarded for trampling on our rights. And the other thing, I guess we'll segue out of the whole soapbox thing, sorry, this has gone on for a long time, is that I have been practicing Semper Petare. I had been really struggling with it for a while, and in one of the last episodes I mentioned how I was really nervous to go to the dentist office. And if you remember back, it's been a while now, the Powerball was up to like $550 million. This was around Christmas, before Christmas, I guess. And I was going to stop at the gas station right near my work after work to pick up a couple of tickets. And when I left work, there were cop cars everywhere. There was a canine unit. And it turned out that like 15 minutes prior to that, the gas station that I was planning on stopping at had been held up. And, you know, it took us a while to figure out why, because most people pay at the pump. Well, it was because the gas station had a lot of cash because of all of the ticket sales. And so, you know...
Yeah, we're talking several thousand to tens of thousands of dollars in cash due to all the people who were trying to play in the Powerball drawing. And, yeah, from what I saw online, the guy was still on the loose.
I don't know that they've ever caught him.
Yeah.
And what really hit me was that it wasn't one of those days where I got up and I didn't carry or I did carry. It was one of those days where I was getting dressed and I was deciding what to wear and debating if I should. And I didn't. I was not carrying that day. And that scared the crap out of me. And I have carried every day. I have carried every day, everywhere I can legally. And I am... I don't know. I'm secure in it. I'm still, you know, working on the car being a reliable weapon. That's an ongoing issue. And I don't know, just the training of drawing from, say, the ankle holster and chambering, since I don't carry with a round in the chamber, and all of these things. But they're taking on more of a priority to me in the Semper Petare scheme of things, because carrying a weapon shouldn't be a security blanket, because you can't expect that if that awful moment comes, drawing the weapon is going to be what intimidates the criminal. You need to be prepared to use it, and being prepared to use it includes having all of that muscle memory and everything. And for me in 2013, that's a huge part of All In, is actually training with the weapons that we have so that it is second nature.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think we are doing things on our end to get Dagny more comfortable with that. And we definitely are, part of our all-in is going to be sort of that repetition, because under stress, we all know that you kind of revert to your basic level of training, your basic level of what you've ingrained as second nature. So I think Dagny's cognizant of that. I'm definitely cognizant of that. So we will do a lot more practice, training, whether it's just informal with us or more formal in the classroom or out on the range under somebody's tutelage. So definitely, I did get some training earlier, and I don't want to get into too much detail about it, but it was pretty awesome, and I'm getting more and more educated. And I think that one of the things that I like to view as an overall lifestyle choice is that I'm forever a student, and I love learning. And as soon as I got bit by the love of firearms, it's really been sort of no looking back. And the books have been piling up, and the DVDs have been piling up, and you know, I'm very, very eager to keep reading and to apply what I read. And, you know, that's a big portion of it too, is to kind of, it's one thing to have the knowledge in your head, but it's another thing to be able to execute it and use it when you need to apply your knowledge, you know. So one thing I definitely want to stress to everyone out there is, you know, there's only so much book learning you can do. You know, you want to get out there and actually apply what you can, and go out there and try to show what you know, at least to yourselves, and educate others too, and teach others. And you know, what else?
I don't know. Offhand, it seems like so much time has passed, and not a lot has really happened in our lives personally. It's just been a lot of national events that are making us take stock of our personal lives and situations.
Yeah, we didn't we we wanted the emotions to kind of normalize again, but it definitely is apparent to us that the country has changed since we last podcast, and we know that, you know, we are speaking to the choir, but what we want to definitely portray is our unique viewpoint in that we are a husband and wife couple. We are, I'd say we are conservative on a lot of issues, but we do lean left on certain issues too. And so it's important for us, I think, to keep our heads and keep our cool and come, you know, present ourselves as, you know, a voice to people who may be on the fence or who may be on the other side, who are just looking at most people and saying, hey, these guys are, you know, not normal or something like that. But we are normal. We're absolutely normal. And we're absolutely American, and we're absolutely right, you know? I think that's the bottom line, is we're right. And people on the other side can make that argument, can be in your face, can be angry. We'll let them be angry. We're going to keep our heads, we're going to keep our cool, and we're going to keep our guns. And, you know, ultimately, I have all the faith in the world that we'll end up on the right side of things. And this is going to be some scary times for law-abiding gun owners. But we've prevailed in the past, and we'll prevail in the future. So keep your heads, keep your faith. Definitely keep your guns. Don't sell them, guys. I know you can make a profit, but just hang on tight. We got a good friend of ours out west who purchased a rifle not too long ago and sold it not too long ago. So I think he was a little concerned about some of the political heat that was going to come his way, because he leans a little on the liberal side. So I'd say, you know, thank you for listening. And
yeah, just
if you emailed us, sorry for us not replying. We've gotten a lot of great emails lately, and
it's been busy. It's been busy, and there's been sickness. So I think we're finally back on our feet here and entering a little bit of regular territory.
Yeah, and it's been over a year since I started the first podcast, but I kind of like to think that the podcasts didn't really become a podcast until Dagny joined the show. And I think most of you all out there would agree with me, if not everyone, that Dagny kind of added that factor that made the podcast worth listening to. And you definitely just don't want to hear me babble on and on about CCW and whatnot. But yeah. I mean, this is 2013, guys, and I'm looking forward to it. You know, this is going to be testing our resolve, and I think it's time to pull us up by our bootstraps and hunker down, because it's going to be a long, long road. But I have every faith in the world that we can walk it, you know. So, with that, Dagny, do you have anything else?
I don't really think so. I would just say, hope you are all in, and Semper Patare.
Thanks, guys. Until next time.